This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. The PatCast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM in Coquitlam. I say this every time. They're big sponsors of ours, and we ask that you support them. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, check them out. The showroom, you can find it on Barnett Highway, 2595 Barnett Highway, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, or start your search online, EagleRidgeGM.com. Botch, I felt like I had gone to a Mike Tyson fight last night, like peak Mike Tyson, 23 seconds. You know, he comes charging out of the corner and lands a roundhouse right square on the chin of the Vancouver Canucks. They buckle, but they don't go down. But a minute 37 seconds in, the knockout blow, and down go the Vancouver Canucks. That was ugly last night.
Yeah, and I think a lot lately I've had these epiphanies on Ryan Miller.
You had time to think out on the road trip?
Yeah, I did, because, well, I'll tell you what happened was that St. Louis game that they lost in St. Louis, and it was the offside call that ended right up really and sealing the deal. That was the knockout punch.
Agitated Willie.
That was angry Willie, yep. Yeah. And that night, I had the local chapter writers had decided Miller had won the Masterton. So they contacted me and said, you got to get some quotes from Miller. And, so I thought, oh man, like this is it. Like this, like everyone heard what a surly, bad attitude, I don't like the press kind of guy Ryan Miller was. And realistically, we haven't really seen that guy. In fact, more often than not, he's been incredibly patient. There was a couple of times in the first year where he kind of exited stage left almost in the middle of a scrum, but it was like 7 minutes in and he said, enough's enough, I'm out of here. But this year that he's had he's been one of the most available, patient, honest, articulate, thoughtful guys on the entire team. But I thought he's gonna blow here because I knew he really wanted to win that game. Like it really meant something to him because he feels, I think in a lot of ways he regrets what happened in St. Louis and just feels that for a lot of different reasons, it was the wrong goalie at the wrong time and he was in the wrong place and it didn't work. And he wanted to show them. It wasn't like stick it to the old team. He wanted to show them that, like, here I am, I've remodeled my game, I've modernized my game, and now I'm really freaking good. And he didn't have a great night, and I had to ask him these Masterton questions. So I waited until he showered and got dressed in his suit, and then I figured I'd get, you know, a couple answers. And he went on and on, like he went back to his days growing up and his parents and going to Michigan State games. Like, he was, I wrote all the quotes out and it was long before I sent them. And I thought, like, these are really amazing. Like, it's really amazing that he was able to take the time, be this thoughtful and reflective on his entire career, go back to how much he loves the game, how the game even now is still fun to him. And I thought, you know, this is like right now, sometimes things just work out and he's the right guy right now. Like, I think this team would be killing Jacob Markstrom, like just destroying his soul, like ripping out the spirit inside him and throwing it on the ground and cutting it into pieces. Like, I think that I honestly believe like Markstrom would be a whimpering wreck if he had a face at this stage of the season after not playing for so many months or barely playing. Like, if he were the starter now thrown into this Lions den, here, go out and save 40. I don't think he would have come out of this normal. Like, I think it would have forever scarred him. And I see Miller as the right goalie at the right time. And I see him last night and I'm like, they're not even giving him a chance. I honestly think right now it's the worst job in hockey. Like, Alex Edler, 23 seconds in, that was brutal. So soft, so weak, so badly timed. And this defense, the luxurious defense.
Can't ever just say the defense.
There is no one who can convince me that this is something that you can say is a strength. And I don't care what you project these guys into. None of them are going to project into high point guys in the NHL. And right now, I'm not like, kind of Ben Hutton's been stuck in a rut. Stetcher's had a kind of tailed off in the second half of the season. Trampkin, like my guy, our guy, the big guy, BFG, man, he is struggling. And since he was told he had one game, couple moments. But to me, since the coach announced that they would have beat the Bruins if he stepped on Marchand, he's fallen apart.
And you pointed it out in the Provies, and now I can't help but watch on a nightly basis, and it was there again for all to see, this down on one knee, sort of sticking out one leg, shoot the duck, like back in the roller skating days when you're in the roller rink. I'm dating myself now, but this is, we haven't seen this from him all season long, but now, like, he's spending so much time in this one knee down position. Like, it's bizarre, and I don't
know
where...
He's regressing.
Yeah,
he is regressing right now, and nope. Whether it's too many minutes or whether it's the onslaught that the forwards aren't getting the puck out, man, he is having a really hard time in the situation that they're in.
And Miller last night, and I haven't seen this one from him either, and I asked him about it post-game, you know, buzzer sounds at the end of the first period. They've been outshot 16-6. I think the shot attempts were 28-7. And, you know, you thought maybe they were going to get out of the period 2-0, but no, win a faceoff cleanly on their own end. And the puck still winds up in their net. 16 seconds to go. Buzzer sounds at the end of the period. And Miller just stands in the crease, head down. Teammates are heading down the tunnel. They're off the ice. They're going to the room. And, like, it was pronounced that, you know, he was collecting himself. I guess he didn't want to get into the room and,
well,
you know,
what did
lose
he
it.
Say when you asked him about it?
And I said, like, you know, I don't want to make too much of it, but that was out of the norm. And he just said, yeah, I got to count to 10. Which essentially meant, like, I was going to lose it. I was going to snap if I went into that room. I had to stay in my crease for all to see so that I didn't, you know, just to calm down, to collect myself before I went into the room because I was going to lose it on my teammates.
411 shots he's faced this month. In no other month did he face 300. He's facing 38 shots a game. He's the oldest goalie in hockey. Playing right now. Only two guys have played games that are older this entire season. And they're averaging, every time he starts, 38 shots against. In fact, for whatever reason, they seem to kind of rally around. They seem to play better defensively around Backman. I don't know if that's the other team checking out or whatever, but the Backman games seem to be there's less shots. But man, like, it has been a brutal month for him.
And we've kind of had this running gag here on the show about, you know, lowering the bar of expectations, keep it under 40.
They're killing the guy, though, man.
The Ducks shut it down last night. The Ducks had 37 shots with 12 minutes to play. And the Ducks basically just packed it up and said, here's the puck. You guys do whatever you want with it for the final 12. We're done. We've done our damage here. It was an unbelievable night, and you were among the lucky ones. And maybe it was veteran savvy on your part to, I know you've been traveling and you need your days here and there. You were lucky that you didn't have to sit and watch that firsthand in person.
Yeah.
Because once the Ducks got up 4-0, they were like, all right, we've got enough scoring. We're done. The Canucks don't score. So, you know, there's no fear of them coming back. Like, honestly, I think they had this.
That's what Carlisle said?
Yeah, on their bench, I think they had this discussion. 4-0. Canucks aren't coming back. Let's run them out of the rink now. Like, we've done our damage on the scoreboard. Right. Let's take a physical toll. Let's see how far we can. There was no pushback either. Like, it was unbelievable. For about 5 minutes in the second period, I thought, like, this is going to get ugly. Like, the Canucks already are down so many guys. They're going to lose a bunch more because the Ducks now are just running their show. And there was no pushback except for the Bulldog. The Bulldog just keeps... Now, the Bulldog started as a defense, or started as a forward. Yeah. There was an in-game trade. Like, we have seen so many things this year. We have so many things this year that we haven't ever seen before. And we saw an in-game trade. And after the game, and I asked the coach, I said, what was that with the switch and, you know, Larson and Biega? And he says, well, it was a physical game. We think Biega is better suited to handling that, which essentially is saying Philip Larson cannot play when games start to turn like this one did. There's no place for him. I can't use him as a defenseman. It's starting to get physical out there, and I have to move him. I have to take him from his defense position and move him up front for fear of him being killed because he came that close to getting killed in New Jersey in December.
That's right.
We can't run the risk of having that happen again on our watch. So they moved him. They got him out of harm's way and moved him up front and let the Bulldog play two positions. For the second straight game, the Bulldog has played both forward and defense.
He's
the Bulldog.
We can see now why they seem to be always going out of their way. Like, why to them he's so important to do with everything that has to do with the expansion draft is all about Biega. Like, will he be exposed as a forward? How do we, you know, is he going to be exposed as a defenseman? Is there anything that Biega can't do? And I saw someone suggest on Twitter to us that is it possible that Biega and Sutter make up 2/3 of next year's second line. Man.
Well, and I mean, the way it finished last night, and I know Besser scored, and that should have been one of the big storylines. Besser finished the game last night with Sutter and Chaput.
Yeah.
Like, here's your star prospect who was given the great opportunity to play with Horvat and Berchi for the first couple of games. And look, I get it, went sideways on them, and nothing was going right, and I didn't really have a problem with the coach experimenting. But Besser with Sutter and Chaput 3 games into his NHL career, it took him to play on a line with Sutter and Chaput.
Man, like, Sutter has really, really struggled. And it's not all injury related since about January 2nd on. And I'm really starting to wonder. I mean, last year was a wreck. This year, the second half for sure has been a wreck for him. You know, obviously JD is pushing the exposed Sutter movement. He seems to be getting a lot of support, more support, increasing support. I think it would be really unfortunate if they keep, to me, if they protect Sutter and keep him and lose a guy like Gaunce, even though there's no bottom line. He doesn't score. He doesn't put up points, but Sutter at that price tag for what he's been giving this team, man, it is really, really hurting them. Like, that was that deal, bringing him in, has so far been one of the big backfires of this front office's regime.
I find, and I don't want to paint everybody on Twitter with the same brush, but I find that there are more people than there should be at this point that seem to think that if you expose Sutter, or anybody, we'll use Sutter, but I get it with, you know, pick a player, Erickson, Markstrom, whoever. Expose this guy as if Vegas, that means they're going to take them.
Well, they're going to take someone. They got
to
take someone.
I get that. They're going to take somebody. And the ideal for any organization is to try to paint Vegas into a corner, right? Steer them in the direction of the guys that you don't mind losing. Yeah. So I think it would be fascinating. And I still, like, there is a part of me that thinks that would be a pretty good play, like tempt Las Vegas to take that player and that contract. And if, you know, worst case scenario, then you take the money that you saved with the contract moving along and spend it on a third line center, and you probably save some bucks. But just by exposing Sutter, it doesn't automatically mean that Las Vegas is going to take that player.
Right, but they have to take someone.
They do have to take someone.
And if you expose Spies and Sutter, I think you're going to lose one of them, and you're going to be better off for it, I think, in the long run.
Right.
If Sutter's name was not Sutter, there's no chance in hell he's playing 19 minutes a game for this team. No way. No way. In fact, he's probably a healthy scratch at certain points. Like, if Berchi can be a healthy scratch, why can't Brandon Sutter be a healthy scratch? And I think that they honestly, I believe that they'd be better off with Granlund playing center, and they would have been better off in the second half of this year that way.
Well, they're going to have some decisions to make, obviously.
They may be better off with a Shore playing center, to be honest, right now in the second half of this year. It's been that bad.
Well, and, you know, I think pretty good chance that they're going to take one of these centers at the top of the draft. And I don't know if any of these guys are going to be NHL ready.
I don't know. Like, but can we just discount this? This defense, man, it has got like a lot of hype early in the season. The organization keeps pimping it. I'm just not seeing it. I'm seeing Alex Edler, 30 years old, not having a very good season. I'm seeing Chris Tanev, 28 years old, not having a very good season. I know he's been injured a ton. He's not having a very good year. I don't see anyone behind those guys who I can for, like, that has the ceiling to be a top pairing defenseman. Not one of them. I see a bunch of guys who could be number fours if all goes right, I don't see anyone that's going to produce offense, and I don't see anyone that's going to be a top pairing guy one day, at least not now.
And that's been an issue for basically ever. I mean, 50 years of existence for the Canucks, and they've never had that one defenseman that's been in the discussion of the, you know, the best defenseman in his era. I remember when they acquired Ed Jovanovski, and people, future Norris Trophy winner Ed Jovanovski. I must have missed those years when they gave him the Norris. And I'm with you there, but we went through this not that long ago, even the Stanley Cup years. You know, they were a team that had a bunch of number twos. They never had that true.
At least the twos are top pairing guys.
Yep.
Like right now, I don't see any top pairing guys on the come.
And so you're suggesting that they're going to go back into the draft for a second straight year and use a high pick on a defenseman? Is that, I know Jim mentioned, like this time he's talking about power play quarterback.
Right.
And there's this Cale Makar, the kid in Brooks in the Alberta Junior Hockey League. And I know people are raving about him and they're high on him. And yet it's the Alberta Junior Hockey League, which is, you know, in the hockey world known to be at a lower level than the BC Hockey League.
Generally, it's a fool's game to be drafting defensemen that high. It's very difficult to hit. Generally, that's not, you know, proven to be the right way to go. You're more likely to have a success drafting a forward, drafting a center. This is the way that it usually goes, but you know, I think that the Canucks have a lot of holes, and they have to, as an organization, they have to say there are holes everywhere. Maybe we can put together a solid fourth line, and maybe we have a couple, we have some wingers coming that they can score, but pretty much everywhere else, there are holes. And I'm like, they are going down the wrong path if they are going to sit there and say, this defense is set. And we're ready to trade a guy like a Ben, any of those young guys that has potential. Because I'm not like, if you pick the wrong one, it's not going to end well.
Patcast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM, coming to the end of March. March is truck month at Eagle Ridge. There's still time to get up to $10,000 total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to EagleRidgeGM.com for full details. Eventful road trip. You were out there every step of the way. Were you in the Canucks room before the game in Minnesota? It seemed everybody in the planet was in the Canucks locker room before they dropped the puck against Minnesota. The Besser, the family. And, yeah.
I don't even think, like...
You weren't part of it?
No.
They didn't invite you?
I didn't get the Willie Evite. I didn't open up my computer screen and see Willie's jazz hands saying, come on down, Botch. We got the doors open. The Bessers here.
Yeah, I think you would have been welcome if you just asked a few questions.
It is super weird that happened. I'm not, like, I agree. Like, it got me. It was emotionally impactful, tugged at my heartstrings, all of that stuff. But it is still, it can be both. It is still super weird that a minutes before a game, Besser's parents are in there reading out the starting lineup. And
Mom giving him a hug and a kiss after that, and then wiping the lipstick. Like, this guy was running the risk of going out for his first NHL game with lipstick on his cheek.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it couldn't have worked out better. Like, it was a great bit of PR in a season that hasn't had much PR. I see it didn't do anything for attendance, though.
No. And then, like, did I get this right? You were there in Winnipeg. So they did the big song and dance with the family in Minnesota. Then they had Besser himself announce the starting lineup in Winnipeg?
Yeah, the next game. The next game, Besser was to read the line.
Couldn't they have Skyped in the parents at that point? Or, like, don't mess with them. You know, don't mess with a winning formula.
Right.
FaceTime. Get them on Skype. Exactly. You have started the same lineup and just played that video?
Play it before every game. Effects.
And they played it last night on the Jumbotron. As you can imagine, they're going to use this as a marketing tool, although I would think just about everybody had seen it by the time it got up on the Jumbotron at the game. And apparently the parents are coming in for the weekend here, so...
Right, are they?
Yeah. They've already seen their son score once, and he scored again last night, and who knows, maybe he'll score again for them.
Yeah, and it's a great story. Like, it's a super nice story, but... People are getting ahead of themselves if they're expecting Besser to go out and score 35 goals in the next year or two. They're getting ahead of themselves. I heard people suggest he's going to be the next captain. Like, just everyone just needs to slow down. Like, he's a very good prospect on a team that doesn't have a lot of and hasn't had a lot of very good prospects. To go, if you're expecting him to be line A next season, you're going to be disappointed.
I would imagine you. I was. I would imagine you were too. Talk about line A. A healthy scratch, or not a healthy scratch, he had the flu, didn't play on
Sunday. Could have played.
He could have played.
Could have played, that's what I heard when I was there.
But it was the Canucks, and so they just didn't feel he needed to play, or?
They said if it was an important game, he would have played. They had not been mathematically eliminated.
Right.
And what I heard was that if it was an important game, he would have played, but since it was the Canucks,
which is probably,
basically we're going to tank.
Which is probably the same thing for Getzlaff last night, too, right? Like, he took the warm-up.
Sure.
And, oh, it's the Canucks. We're going to have a 2-0 lead. A minute and 37 seconds in, you don't need to play tonight, Ryan.
At the end of last season, the Sedins lamented the last 15 games, how horrendous it was. Willie references it all the time, how difficult last year was, how the players weren't, basically he's said, if not strongly suggested, that the players weren't trying to win late in the season. I think this March and April is worse than last March and April. They were not giving up 38 shots a game. 35, close, but it was not this bad defensively. This is the worst it's ever been that I can, like a worst like month I've ever seen in terms of how the Canucks play defensively and how they're just gutted. This idea, like Jim told you in his interview, that they were keeping everything to the outside. Was he with you when he said that? Were you in person?
No, he was in St. Louis. He was on the trip.
Right.
So I don't know if he was able to say it with a straight face. Right. But, Corey Perry scored from 15 feet out directly in front of the net after about three breakdowns, 23 seconds into the hockey game.
I would like to hear him say that with Ryan Miller right beside him. Like, I would like
watching video of the two of them together and
that
analyzing the same goals and the same breakdowns.
Man, you just ravaged him in that interview, eh?
Did I?
Well, not necessarily him, but like basically you had that question about the special teams and how horrible they've been all year. And he basically to me, how I'm hearing it is just like the coaching staff is just getting shredded. And then Jim goes, yeah, that's a fair comment. They've been horrible.
But that was 2 weeks ago. That was the 2 week ago interview.
But they all blend in.
This past week was when I asked him about the fan base, the portion of the fan base tanking. And then he lost me with his response where I said, there's a group of your fans that would like to see you lose every game.
I told you, like, I was texting you that night. Yeah. I listened to that like six times before I finally, what I thought, figured out what he was saying. And he was saying that the team is tanking. And he said, like, this could have happened if we were healthy or not. This could have happened, he said, if we were trying and going all out and being competitive or not. So what he was saying is, we're losing a ton of games. The team isn't really trying. But even if they were, we would still be losing all these games. Like, it's an amazing string of quotes that you have to listen to it multiple times and read out the quotes to fully let it, like, sink in. But he is telling you that this team is awful, and they would be awful whether they were trying or not. But right now, they're not really trying.
And, you know, you talk about this March and April compared to last March and April, and they're both ghastly. And it is sometimes, like, you get a little bit numb to the losing, you know, for you and I. We don't get paid by the results, but we cover this team day in, day out, and you know that they've lost a lot. But I've got a piece coming up tomorrow in Canucks Army where it dawned on me this week that in the next 7 days here, Botch, the Canucks are going to lose their 100th game. In the last two seasons.
Wow.
Since the start of last season, they're sitting on 97 losses. The bulk of those in regulation, I think 75 in regulation and 22 overtime or shootout. They're coming up on 100 losses in 2 years. Like, it wasn't that long ago we were watching 100-point seasons. And now we're talking about 100 losses in a 160-game span.
I was on my way back from Winnipeg and someone DM'd me and said, like, how different is it covering the team now compared to how it used to be? I said, oh man, like, Like in the old days, I would look forward to every single game. And I like thinking back, I'm kind of fortunate my face didn't freeze and like holy fuck face because of the Sedins. And every game there would be multiple shifts where you just went, holy shit, like this is incredible what I'm seeing right now. And you even look like when they played against like the bad teams, like Edmonton and the bad teams of the day, you knew the Sedins were going to go ham. So you look forward to those games. And back in those, like everything felt important back then, like every line change, every, you know, what goalie was starting, who was injured, like, you know, guy, a prominent defenseman on your top pairing, which Troy Stetcher has been, if he hurt his shoulder in 2011 or 2010, there would be days of people writing about it and gifts being presented and theories, how hurt is he, when is he going to be back? Like every minute detail was of great import. And now it feels often like none of it matters. It just does, like, well, he's hurting out. Like,
and oh, it's wow. Funny you say that because he got hurt on Sunday. Monday was a team day off. Nobody asked any questions. Nobody, right. You know, like there wasn't any stories, an update, nothing. It was like,
yeah, I haven't seen any updates.
We'll find out at the rink tomorrow. why bother today? We'll find out tomorrow. Right. And you're right. Like that just seems like we've talked about sort of how the circle has just gotten so much smaller around covering this team. And some days there's next to nobody. You know, there's more PR staff than there are media people right. in the room. And again, last night, post game, like one of their worst performances of the year. You know, Henrik stands in and does his thing. Besser had scored, and they went and found him and brought him out. There was the demand to talk to him. And Ryan Miller dutifully does his thing. That was it. Like, they had...
Oh, it was just the three guys?
Yeah, everybody else had scattered. Like, there were no warm bodies in that room to talk to. And again, we talk about the breakdowns, and there were a lot of them and lots of guys. I mean, there's enough to go around on a night like last night, and yet two veterans and the rookie, the prize prospect, those are the three that are there and available to the media. And so, you know, you're not getting many explanations about why things are going wrong. Like, they're tired of talking about it. They're right. tired of talking about the losing and tired of – I'm sure they're tired of losing – but six more games to go. I don't think there's many wins left in this group with six to go.
Yeah, and I'm low. Like, I hate when people in the media, like, criticize players for talking or not talking or doing this or not doing that. But it is a job in that locker room that the Sedins have embraced. And I would suggest to you that it would be nice, a nice idea every once in a while, if Horvat and Berchi said, you know what, Henrik and Daniel, I know it's another loss, but we got this. We're going to go out. Like, you guys get out of here. Because they don't want, like, believe me. Henrik and Daniel don't want to be up there answering the same questions at the end of a similar year to what happened last year and what happened 3 years ago. They're sick of it at this time of season. And it would be nice if those young leaders would say, look, we'll deal with Anthony, you know, volley back these questions about why we suck so bad.
And that was my point when I wrote a month ago about making Horvat the captain, because and it's not going to happen. I get that. They're not going to strip Henrik Sedin of the C, but where I was coming from is next year's going to look exactly like this one. I just don't see how there's a whole lot of traction. I think next year's another really difficult year for the Vancouver Canuck organization for many of the reasons we've spent the last half hour talking about. And you know, does Henrik have the appetite to stand in there night after night after night? Man, you know, if next year is going to be their final year, like take that burden away from the two of them, but particularly Henrik, and move it on to the next group, the shoulders of the next group. And you know, so again, I sort of stand by the reasoning. Again, I don't expect that to happen, but I'm with you. Like there are some nights where And Henrik doesn't make a lot of sense on a lot of nights now. Like last night he tried to tell me that the volume of shots didn't matter and that wasn't the way to assess the way the game was played. And I kind of looked at him and he looked like he was done. He didn't want any more questions. But I thought, like, I just said, like, you know, is it just the norm now? Like, do you guys accept with this lineup that you're going to go up 40 shots? And he said, well, you know, shots aren't really the, you know, an indicator of anything. No, shots are an indicator of just about everything at this point, but I didn't have the heart to go back at him looking for a response or a further explanation. But again, like, I think he's just kind of grasping now and sort of pulling things out of thin air and hoping they sound shots good. Shots don't matter. Yeah. So,
I don't know. Like, I often, when I'm by myself, I do wonder, like, really, like, how they want to stay, like, why they don't want to go chase a ring, like, why, like, at this point in their career where the end is clearly near, like, it's not just an age, you can tell by the way they're playing. Their bodies have taken a lot of abuse over the years, and credit to them for playing so many games and playing through so many injuries. But at this point, when they could be an effective second line team, second line on a really good team with a really good winger, give them they can't survive with Chaput and Megna and even Sutter and all these other guys that they've been lined with this year. But if they got onto a good team with a good winger, they could be a really good second line. They would have the potential to go for a championship. And I just don't get, like, why. I just can't relate. Like, why is that not a burn for them to go out and do that?
And I counter that just by saying good teams already have good players. And so I don't think they're a second line on a good team. If they're being brought in, I think they're being looked at as a third line at this stage of their career.
I don't know.
Maybe, like, a little bit of power
instance,
play.
For instance, if it was the Blues, you could put Berglund to their third line. You could have them as a second line.
But are the Blues a good team? The Blues are a playoff team, but I don't know that they qualify as a good team.
They could be with the Sedins. I think the Sedins would help them, give them a chance in the West.
Would you go to bat for the city of St. Louis as a great place to live and visit?
Would you do some work? I was just telling you earlier, like,
Chamber of Commerce work for
my belt broke in St. Louis, and I'm like between like pant sizes, so my pants were like falling down, and it was during the day, and there's nothing. No one ever believes me unless you've been there. There's nothing going on in St. Louis. Like, I had to get medicine one time. Like, just at a pharmacy, and the guy, it was like a $25 cat. Like, we left downtown. I'm like, downtown's way in the distance. Looks like the sun is setting, and I see downtown and that stupid arch, like, sinking below the horizon. I'm like, holy shit, like, where are we going? And this is the cabbie's like, this is the only place that you can get something like this. And I'm like, all of downtown, there's no, like, pharmacy? He said no. So there's no way you can get a belt downtown. And one day I will, like, film. I'll get the taxi or an Uber guy to drive me all around downtown, and I'll film, like, how it's deserted and there's no one there. There's no cars. There's no people. Like, it looks like the apocalypse has hit St. Louis. So I'm screwed holding up my pants the entire time. And then I eventually, when I got back that night, so one hand, I'm trying to do interviews, everything right. One hand is always on my jeans, holding them up. And then I went to the airport thinking I could buy a belt there. There was nothing. I went to see if I could jerry-rig some luggage straps around my pants. No. So I had to build a shirt belt that I tied in a knot around my pants. And then I tried to go through security, and he's like, you got to take off your belt. And I said, that's not a belt. That's a shirt. He said, you still got to take it off. So then they have that one screening where you got to put your hands up in, like, a pyramid over your head, and the thing whirls around. And I said, I can't, like, I literally can't do it because my pants are going to fall off. So then I had to get a pat down with me holding up with one hand. So that was my experience in St. Louis. So would I recommend St. Louis to the Sedins? Not if they need belts. If they needed a belt.
Or pharmaceuticals. But that sounds like your millions just waiting to be made to open a pharmacy now under the arch.
There's no one there,
in St. Louis. I've only been once.
No people there.
I went to the draft. I want to say 96 draft. It was the Chris Phillips draft. We're going back way, way, way back. Most humid conditions I've ever experienced. And I've been to some places around North America and elsewhere that, you know, I would consider humid. This was next level humidity, and I felt bad for these poor draft prospects. They always trot them out, you know, a few days ahead of the draft. They usually pick a locale that is, you know, sort of a hot spot in the city to trot them out and make them available to the media. And this is back in the days too, before, you know, the jerseys that they wore are now like high tech microfiber and all that stuff. Right. These were old school polyester jerseys, and Eric Brewer, like
hockey sweaters.
Yeah. Eric Brewer played for Prince George, and he had this black, like the black Cougars jersey. And I just thought we were going to lose him. I thought like he was just going to melt, like, you know, be a puddle of Eric Brewer standing there. He seemed to survive, but I remember Brian Burke jogging on the streets of St. Louis midday, sort of peak Burkey, right? Like, make sure that you, everybody in hockey sees he's out there for midday jog.
I'm here.
And he was working for the NHL back then. And again, it was so hot and so humid, and he's just sweating buckets. Those are my memories of St. Louis.
Yeah.
So
it's not highly recommend. But
were suspenders a non-start? I'm just trying to picture. Like, were you looking for options?
I look for, like, everything, man. I look for everything.
Would you do suspenders?
I would do, yeah. I would have, at that point, I had no shame. Like, my hand is on my waist of my jeans holding them up. Like, it looked ridiculous. I would have taken suspenders. I was looking for a luggage strap that I could tie in like a knot, like I could jerry rig. I went to a luggage store and the guy's like, try this, try that. I'm trying like these different things to wrap around it.
Isn't there like a ginorma mega mall in Minnesota? Isn't Mall of the Americas? Like, did you get a belt somewhere along the line? Did you?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I got this one here.
Oh, still wearing it. Fabulous, nice. Too.
Yeah, that was, I paid like 25 American, so I'm like, I'm going to make the use of out of this stupid belt. But yeah, I did, but I wasn't in Minneapolis. I was on my way. So I had the whole air, you know, I had to get on a plane and I had that whole scene to go. Like, I had to jerry rig that shirt belt until I could get to Minneapolis and get to that mall. Well, yeah, they have stores there.
Is that raspberry? What color are we calling that? I'd go some sort of raspberry color. That's good for you. Is it not? How would you describe the color of the...
It looks, yeah.
It's a podcast. People can't see it.
A blueberry raspberry. It looks like blueberry to me.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well. Nicely done. You really did see a little bit of everything on this road trip, though. Like, when you think, you picked it up in Chicago. We did the podcast last week after the 5-goal explosion. Nobody saw that coming.
Right.
Right.
But that's the most, that's as dominated as I've ever seen a team.
Right.
And like, they struggled, even at the beginning of the game when it was kind of even, they weren't even getting the puck, like, 2 or 3 times where they even, it was such a strain to get the puck over center ice. And then once the Hawks went down and they flipped the switch, it was lights out, or it should have been.
Right, and that's what made the Minnesota win at least palatable to many, because it was the kids. Boucher with a couple, Besser, we know about the debut. The Chicago
highlight
game,
the
2 for Sutter, the Twins each score. They get outshot 44-15. I think the shots were 10-1 at one point, but they had a goal. You know, and that's where people talk about the tank. There are some nights where, you know, things that are just inexplicable are going to happen. Right? Like that Chicago game. They play that game 100 times. I'm not sure that they win it again.
Yeah.
Like Joel Quenneville said 90%. He said, we play that game again, we win it 90%.
Well, he did say that.
He said 90%. I'm saying that's way low. Like, if you played that same game and the Canucks got outshot 44-15.
Right.
I'm not sure that they win it again.
5 or 6 maybe out of 100.
Maybe. You know, and then in Minnesota, they didn't have to face Devin Dubnyk, and I'm not sure that he makes the difference in that game necessarily, but, you know, it was a bit of a break for them to see a goaltender that doesn't see the ice very much. And
yeah, they are tanking. Like, this is what tanking looks like. You trade 2 of your best players in Burrows and Yannick Hansen. You have a lineup where you called me on it last week when I was away about
six
NHL forwards, and I could not come up with the 6. They have 5 legit NHL forwards. Like, this is what a tank looks like. And people can say all they want, well, the players aren't tanking. What happens is it gets so debilitating. Like, if you ever played like PlayStation or Xbox, and you've I've tried to play one of those NHL games and sit down against Wyatt or one of these guys that's amazing, like, it is so frustrating. You want to break things, and then you just want to give up. Like, you end games in the second period. You just want to say, I don't want any more of this beatdown. Leave me alone. And psychologically, it's the same thing that happens to pro athletes. Like Miller last night, needing the moment. Like, the veterans end up breaking down because they know that they don't have the horses to compete with the teams that they're playing against, and it gets super frustrating. So the tank starts at management, and it goes all the way down because the management decision affects the coaching decisions. Play the young guys, do this. So now Willie's all fucked up. He doesn't know, you know, what he's supposed to do. Like, Goldobin can't play on the power play. He's just got here. Oh, Besser, you were on the power play right away. Like, he's not even making sense anymore. Right. Like, there's no logic to what he does. And I think I read someone tweeted out, like, yesterday, he said, yeah, the kids still have to earn it a little bit. Like, what? Like, 2 weeks ago, you were so adamant and passionate about, like, this is the way we do things in Vancouver. The kids have to earn it. We don't give anything for free. And when we do, you know, they collapse and we have to send them down to Utica for the year. And now he's like, well, some guys will give them some stuff. And some guys, like, he is so mixed up. He doesn't know whether he's coming or going. And then it drips all the way down to the players who see a coach that's screwed up. See management that's given the team they can't compete with, and then they just end up checking out like they did at the beginning of last night's game.
You and I then should play Xbox, because you sound like your skills on Xbox NHL 17 or whatever are in line with mine. Like, my son is 11, and his buddies, like, I watch them play, and same deal. Like, the puck's just moving all over the place, right. And I play, and my guy gets the puck on his stick, and before I know it, he crashes into the boards, always. Like, I can't... A, B. I can't pass. I can never pass.
Right.
And I always pick a team with Shea Weber. And I think, okay, I'm just going to, like, slap shots. My guy's, you know, super, super powered. I can't. No. He crashes into the board. I can't even.
You got to try to go with the fastest.
I can't get team. The shot off. So I understand your pain there. Speaking of pain, though, I thought it was pretty funny last night, too. Post game, it came out during the game that the newest new guy. And every day there's another new guy, right? Coming in. Yeah. And so Griffin Milano is the newest new guy. Curious signing, too, after 2 years at Western Michigan. And he's going to play on Friday.
Right.
And that was confirmed during the game. So I said to Willie post-game, I said, sounds like the youth movement's going to continue on Friday. You're going to inject another new guy. And he looked at me and he said, yep. And looked and sounded so defeated as he said it. And then I could see the wheels in his head spinning, like, this is live, like, Jim might be listening somewhere, right? Jim and Trevor might be on the other side of the wall listening.
Right.
And then he perked up and he talked about how excited he was to see another new guy. But his initial response to that question was like, yep, oh, God, another one. Like, yeah. You know, and here it is pretty remarkable that they just continue to plug these guys in. And you're right. So the rules are different for different guys. And who knows? I see they sent LeBate back. And so now it's Griffin Milano's
time. He was on emergency. They are going to end the season with those two recalls.
Sure they are.
Like, which you called like a month ago. It's going
to happen. The playoff push. Got to have the playoff push. The playoff push is important. For those guys down in Utica.
Oh,
and they may
man.
Not get in. It's just a playoff push.
Who cares? There's two guys. There's Demko and Virtanen. That's it. That's the only guys that mean anything to them on that team. And there have been situations, like even on that road trip we talked about, where Subban could have come up, played in the NHL a couple of games, not missed any games in Utica, would have been fine. Like, honestly, like if Subban plays, like how many shots are they giving out? Like what's the, like was 38 last night? How many more was Subban? Like two more?
Yeah, I had somebody tweet me mid-game and said, like, it was 4-0 at that point. And they said, like, how bad would it be with Subban? Would it be 12-0 at this point? And who cares?
Right. Now they're putting in, like, guys, I just signed him. He's just from Western Michigan. He's in. But Subban can't get a carrot?
I know. This guy, 2 years of college hockey. Subban has 2 years of professional hockey under his belt. And can't get a look, and you're shuttling defensemen and forwards back and forth in game.
Right.
In game. Guys that you have zero allegiance to, and it was one of my great frustrations with this team and this organization last year. They knew they were walking away from Matt Bartkowski.
Right.
They knew that mid-season, and he played 80 games.
Right to the end. And that last game.
And they're doing the same thing with some of these guys, and if Megna was healthy... he'd be in there, and he might, you know, he's skating again, so he may get a few of these final six games. You know, Larson's not coming back next year, and yet there he is, he's playing, and for some reason.
Yeah, and I'm just so tired of, like, Subban can't play, and Subban sucks, and he'd be here if he was any good. Like, let give him a chance. Give the guy, you drafted him, you signed him, you're playing these other guys that you just signed. Out of nowhere, immediately, without any time with Travis Green, I have a feeling Jordan Subban is going to be just fine. He put up big numbers on a bad team with no offensive talent on their power play. What could he do if given some decent players to play with? Let's see what he can do. I think it's a shame what they've done to the guy.
Not so fast, Botch, because... Really? We got to see the Tan Man run the power play. Oh,
that's right. That was crazy.
The big blast in Winnipeg hit the post.
One of the still great ringing moments. In my... I'm sure he dreams about like that all summer long. Like what he thinks about is adding more offense to the team. And I think that I think he had 26 before that game, 26 shots on net, like the whole season. Yeah. And then he fires up like, wow. He was like Iron Fist, like his fist, like his hands glowed as he wound up and hit that slap shot, like the perfect Tanev connection. It was one of the great moments I'm sure that he's had this entire season because it's been a brutal season for him. Played through multiple injuries. Willie doesn't even think he's been healthy for 5 days the entire season. So great moment for Tanev. But when you design your power play, which is now they're saying that power play is now designed to go through the Tan Man. you got me. Like it's just the end, right? It's the end of we've reached the end. The end, Willie. The end of this coaching staff. It's time they've run out. They've totally run out of ideas.
Right, and that's
time for something new.
But like contractually, Willie is he's responsible to do a pregame interview on radio. Like that's just part of his drill. So 82 games, he's going to do it 82 times. And before the Minnesota game or the Winnipeg game, he said, I'd like to see Tanev on the power play. I think he's deserved that. He's responsible. Oh,
that was before the Chicago game. I saw that.
Oh, that's
interview.
Right. You're right.
It was interview going now.
That's right. It was midweek
and
last
I,
week.
I was about 20 feet away and my jaw was about 3 inches off the floor.
So your pants and your jaw hit the floor at the same time. Quite a road trip. But again, he talks about he's deserved it, but then he says he's responsible, which to me means he's out there on the off chance that the other team comes the other way.
Right.
We've got this safety valve that is going to bail our... Again, think about... like try to wrap your head around this thinking. He's a safety valve that's going to bail our power play out if the shorthanded team... gets the puck and goes on the attack. But that's the thinking here, and that's been the thinking all year with this power play. It's not attack, attack, attack. It's let's make sure that we don't give up shorthanded scoring opportunities.
Well, I don't think that it's just the power play because it does also connect with other areas. Like he was really upset with Sven Berchi for doing whatever he could to try to score a goal when they were shorthanded and he was a two on one. And Berchi nearly got that puck through. Like that was not an easy save to make. And he made the right call. The pass was being taken away from two guys. There was a guy trailing Horvat and there was a guy in the middle of them. Like he made the right call in terms of the shot, but he ended up getting back in time and he didn't, he had a clearing attempt but Willie was not happy at all with Sven Berchi on that shift. And what was Berchi trying to do? He was trying to score a goal in a tie game.
To give them a lead. Yes, right. I know. Forget protecting the tie. Sven, you have stepped out of line. We are here to protect. We're here to protect this tie. And you're trying to get us a lead. That will not wash.
Sven,
can't do it.
We've told you 1,000 times this season, we're just here for the point. Just get that point, baby.
Therefore, you will sit for the final 5 minutes. You can take a seat with Besser and Goldobin and Boucher. There's room for you over there, too, in these final 5 minutes because now it's 2-1 and we need a goal and I don't want you guys playing. We haven't really talked about Goldobin. The debut was terrific and the storylines that it presented, but let's be honest.
The coaches buried him.
Let's be honest, though. Like even in the little bit of ice time that he gets... not showing an awful lot. There hasn't been a whole lot there from
Goldie. No, but I mean, look, he's told like you can't make mistakes. He's been benched already so far this year. He hasn't got the opportunity to play a lot. He's used to playing a ton of minutes, and he's used to playing a lot on the power play. What was the first thing that the Sedin said after that Besser game? Said, we're happy that he got on the power play because he gets a chance to handle the puck and get his confidence up. Goldobin was never given those same opportunities. So you can expect if he goes out there and plays 6 or 7 minutes and has a couple crappy shifts, you can't pin that on him. If you were playing 16, 17 minutes a game and all of those minutes were horrible, look, fair enough. Like rip the guy, bench the guy, do whatever. But Goldobin has not given his due. I agree. He's looked bad in certain games. I thought he was really bad in that Winnipeg game, but I think he's a guy that's struggling with the head game right now of coming up to a team, being told you can't play on the power play and being told that you're going to play 6 or 7 minutes a game. And most likely you're going to be benched in the third period. That's a lot to deal with.
Six games to go for the Vancouver Canucks, Los Angeles, and then the return of Yannick Hansen on Sunday night. Get the video tribute going. I would imagine that they'll have some sort of video welcome back for, well, Yanni. It hasn't gone all that well for him down in San Jose, but he did score last night.
I hope maybe there's a Drance imagery in that. Like the Drance-Yannick Hansen combo is legendary.
What?
And Yannick Hansen knew all about it, too. So I want to see somehow, like, whether, maybe it's the picture of you, Drance, and Moj that they could throw up there for a brief, shiny moment. I want to see a nod to my guy in Florida, man.
I was starting to worry a little bit for Hansen, and I thought maybe the Sharks had consulted the Panthers on how to get Yannick Hansen up to speed and what it would take and what situations, because, you know, that was always the Drancer thing. He knew the situations, right? Put right. the guy in places to succeed. So I thought maybe the Sharks would consult, but now you can't do that because Drance is an employee of another NHL team. You can't cross that line, I don't
maybe
think.
Maybe call off the record and...
Perhaps.
Hey, Drance, what should we do here?
Meet in a dark alley somewhere, exchange some information, get it. Because Hansen scored his first as a Shark. He had an assist. They won for the first time in a while. So Canucks still see the Sharks twice and the Oilers twice and division title up for grabs.
Good God.
And again, like the Ducks without Getzlaff last night just absolutely pulverized the Vancouver Canucks. So, I don't think that there's a whole lot of fun left in these final six games for the Vancouver Canucks. But there is always fun with the podcast. We'll continue to do this. And again, when the season ends, then the good stuff begins, because the offseason now is far more interesting to a lot of people
right.
than the 82 games that they just get
so
out
the,
there.
The podcast continues into the offseason?
Oh, I think so.
All right.
I think so. That's cool. The plan.
All right.
I should mention, though, that week right after the season ends, like they clean out the lockers and stuff, I'm scattering. I'm disappearing.
Oh, wow. Where are you going? Disneyland?
No. Going to New York for a week.
Oh, wow.
Taking my wife. It's her birthday. She's never been to New York City.
You going to Hamilton? So, where are you going? Broadway show?
We'll take in some Broadway shows. That's on her list. It's her birthday, so we'll kind of go with the flow there. But so that week with the clean out the lockers and the State of the Union and all that kind of stuff, like it'll be heavily covered, but our full breakdown of all that went on that week is going to be delayed by a
You're
week.
Not going to call me from New York? And
no, this has been in the planning for a long time. All and right. so this is just a personal getaway. We're going to leave hockey behind.
Live on Broadway.
Yeah, not so much.
All right.
But the playoffs will begin. The Rangers will be playing. I don't think I'll be able to convince my wife to go to a hockey game.
No.
Can't convince her to go to a game here. Don't think I can convince her to go to a game at Madison Square. But anyways, so it'll be a podcast next week in its usual spot, midweek. People always want, you know, I get a lot of those. Like, when's the next podcast? Basically, we found the system that works is non-game days. Like, game days...
It's usually Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right, and we try to pick a non-game day so that it has a little bit of shelf life, so as many of you as possible, you know, can sit back and enjoy the podcast in its entirety. If you do it at 2 o'clock on a game day, at 7 o'clock, puck drops, and then the storylines all change. So that's kind of the thinking with where the podcast has come from all year long. But
man,
we'll do it again.
You sound like a veteran podcaster. Like,
we'll do it again
really
next
what's
week.
What.
And then, again, as we said, there's lots to come with the expansion draft and the draft itself and free agency and the future of the coach. So it's going to be an interesting and, I think, fairly notable offseason here for the Vancouver Canucks. The podcast, as always, presentation of the good folks at Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone's a part of their hockey family. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, please start your search online, eagleridgegm.com, the website. They'd appreciate it. We would as well. Botch, good stuff. Good to have you back. Nice belt. Glad that the pants are back where they're supposed to be. Six to go for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll reconvene and do it again next week here, the podcast on Province Radio.